From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Tony Harris. Starbucks is serving up diversity training following an incident that put the company in real hot water. Isn't Starbucks as much about public space as it is about coffee and tea? Well, that's one for the break room gang this morning. Also, tell me again why Beyonce is the first woman of color to headline Coachella. And rapper-songwriter Kendrick Lamar is a Pulitzer Prize winner. That's ahead this hour, but first, we talked about mandatory gun laws in Georgia. Kennesaw has an ordinance requiring heads of households to maintain working firearms and ammunition. Here are your first thoughts. Ben Mercer of Woodstock left us this message.
Shouldn't go without mentioning that there's been two mass shootings in Kennesaw the past several years, one at the FedEx facility and one at Penske. So whether that ordinance works or not, I don't think so.
We always want to know what you think. You can call us, like Ben did, at 404-500-9457. We're on Twitter at OST Talk, or you can post to Facebook, and we might feature your comments on the program. So there are some really good new books out by Southern writers right now, and we have suggestions for your reading list, courtesy of Allison Law of the Literary Atlanta podcast. Allison, good morning.
Good morning, Tony.
And also with us is Nikki Salcedo. Her most recent novel is All Beautiful Things. Nikki, welcome back.
Good morning.
Allison, let's have you get us started here. The Fighter, right, is by Michael Ferris Smith. I've got a bit of a description here from Amazon. It says it's a blistering novel of violence and deliverance set against the mythic backdrop of the Mississippi Delta. Why do you like this one?
Well, because, it sounds kind of like the feel-good book of the year when you put it that
yes,
way. But
yes.
As the title infers, there is a fighter named Jack. He's not just a fighter, but he is a gloves-off cage fighter. Mm. And kind of like the movie Memento, he has endured so much physical violence in his life. He has to keep notes of the people who are his friends and his enemies.
Yeah.
And so you want to know, how did he arrive at this place? Who loved him? Mm-hmm. What does the landscape contribute? And at the heart of it, there's also this money, need for money.
What's his journey? What's the central conflict in his life?
He was abandoned as a baby. His parents left him at a Salvation Army, and he was adopted by a mother who was an outsider.
Yeah.
And so he found his identity through fighting.
Big Mama Sweet is one of the main characters of the
book. She is.
Yeah.
Jack owes her some money, and she thinks that the only way that he's going to be able to pay her back is by going through a lethal final fight.
And do we root for Jack, are we challenged by his flaws in rooting for him?
I think absolutely by the end of the book, you will be rooting for Jack.
Okay. Nikki, you ready?
I'm ready.
You like As Good as True by Cheryl Reed. It's described here as a powerful and haunting novel of a woman's broken past and the painful choices she must make to keep her family and her home. Ooh, tell us more.
I like this story because it's a Southern story with a central protagonist who is not Southern. I think that's interesting and unique. The main character is a Syrian immigrant. She comes from a troubled marriage. It's a story about complex relationships and terrible choices. So it's different than the average Southern beach book that you might take with you to Hilton Head this summer.
Right. Syrian immigrant's daughter living in Alabama in 1956.
Yeah, that's an exciting time to live in Alabama and be from Syria.
How does the book describe life in Alabama in 1956 for a Syrian immigrant, right?
Interestingly enough, her life is already complicated in the house. Being in Alabama in 1956 is not necessarily better or worse than her situation. This character befriends a black postal worker, which maybe complicates the story in a time. And she's a woman who would give someone a glass of water. And it's just an interesting way of looking at characters. It's a character study story.
Yeah.
It is bleak. So if you need happy, next time I'll start with my happy suggestions. But okay. I think it's an interesting story, and I like Southern stories that take a different turn.
So, Allison, the book Whiskey and Ribbons is by Lisa Cross Smith.
That's correct.
A debut novel for this writer. It's described as a novel about loss, grief, family secrets, and the unexpected sources from which people take solace after unbelievable tragedy. Tell
yes.
us more.
The main character in the book, Evie, loses her police officer husband. He is killed in the line of duty when she is 9 months pregnant. And so that's the dramatic event that sets off the rest of the book. The rest of the book is Evie and her brother-in-law and their family trying to deal with that loss and finding beauty in remembering and in discovering themselves after such a tremendous loss.
And Nikki, last one for you. Strong as a Mother by Kate Rope. Tell me why you like this one.
This to me is a happy book. It's a nonfiction book about experiences of mothers. You don't have to be a biological mother, even though the title says from pregnancy on. You could be an adoptive mother, a stepmother. You can open up the book and look for a chapter that speaks to you. And it's really relatable because it's about experiences, not advice.
Allison Law of the Literary Atlanta podcast and Decatur-based author Nikki Salcedo. Thank you both for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Those are a few of their favorite reads right now from contemporary Southern authors. You can learn more about their selections at gbbnews.org. It's On Second Thought. I'm Tony Harris. It has been a long week. Let's see. We've talked about peach growing, the Pulitzer Prize, and being in the stroke belt here in the South. So as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of really smart people to talk about the week's news. It is time for the break room.
Starbucks coffee is anti-black.
Starbucks coffee is anti-black.
I'm sweating already.
Ooh, we have some things to talk about this morning. I am joined this week by Christian Zylovitz, Director of Community Outreach of Pride School Atlanta. Jake Evans is here. He's president of Atlanta Young Republicans. And Tamika DePriest is here. She is Senior Director of Communications at Emory University. Welcome, welcome.
Good morning.
It's time for the weekend. So let's talk about rapper, songwriter Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar did a thing this week, right? He only made history. He is the first non-classical or jazz artist to win the Pulitzer Prize for music for his album, Damn.
Sit down. Be humble. Holla, sit down. Be humble. Sit down.
So, Christian, let me start with you. I know Kendrick Lamar winning a Pulitzer Prize is a big deal. I just need you to tell me why.
You know, given all the, I guess, the conversation around how differently, you know, with the Me Too generation and how differently we want everybody to be talking about women and girls and their bodies and sex and relationships, it's really just amazing to me to see how it's so, I guess, applauded.
Yeah.
I read some of the lyrics this morning on
because
my way in the car.
Because you think that the lyrical content goes against the messaging that's out here at the moment?
I think so. You know, it's, I see it as an art form,
right,
but I think you still have to acknowledge the content of the music. I think there's strong messages that are great from everything that even just reading the lyrics. I mean, it's poetry.
Right.
But you still need to consider, are you awarding somebody for pornography?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, when you don't want your daughters or your teenage boys listening to it, but you want to celebrate it, is there another place for that award? That's my question. As an educator,
you kicked it
as a parent,
off. Okay.
As a parent of young children,
yeah,
too,
yeah.
My children don't listen to it. But, you know, I'm an average suburban white guy who's 48. But I still wouldn't want my teenage son repeating those lyrics anywhere in school or anywhere nearby.
Why is the Pulitzer, Tamika, honoring this artist at this moment, given some of the lyrical content that Christian is pointing to here?
So I think this is an interesting time. One, I want to say this is a great PR move on behalf of Pulitzer. Yeah. But let me, that aside, two things. One is rap music does, as a genre, contain misogynistic and problematic imagery and language. Not all. So I do want to say that there is some hip hop and rap that your children could listen to. Mm-hmm. Christian, that aside, you know, I sort of want to take a step back and think about Bob Dylan,
sure.
who also, you know, sort of represented a different take for a Pulitzer Prize winner. When he was awarded. And, you know, I think of the complexity of people and artists. You know, so I think that can be inherent in the work. So I think also about Tupac with this dual consciousness.
Right.
Yes, there's this part that sort of represents dark, you know, and problematic imagery. But yet on the other side, there's this consciousness. There is this rallying toward, you know, some political statements,
right,
and analysis of life in America. And so I think Kendrick receiving this award sort of represents that kind of artistry, that sort of complexity in artistry. And, you know, hip hop and rap is improvisational like jazz. I mean, there's some similarities in terms of how these art forms emerged.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've said all of that. And so I guess I'm saying I can stomach Kendrick getting a Pulitzer at this time.
And Jake, before we go to break here, let me get a quick thought from you on Kendrick Lamar.
Sure. Well, being a millennial, I mean, I think this is kind of long overdue. I think this puts the Pulitzer into the 21st century. I mean, it was remarkable to me that it is the first time a non-classical jazz artist has won. One concern that I have, and overall I think this is a great thing, is I don't want the Pulitzer to capitulate just to societal mm-hmm. popularity. I think that this album is unique in that it does speak to broader societal and cultural issues, and so it does have that enriching cultural sophistication to it. But I do think it would be problematic to just award whatever is the most popular album that year, and I don't think the Pulitzer is going to do that long term. But as a younger person, I think it's very insular currently looking at the people who have historically gotten this award, an academic in a way, and this kind of takes the award to a more current level.
Gotcha. And I'm back in the break room with Christian Zylovitz, Director of Community Outreach at Pride School Atlanta, Jake Evans, President of Atlanta Young Republicans, and Tamika Priest is here. She is Senior Director of Communications at Emory University, and look who joined us.
Oh, hi.
What? Galena Bowler is here. She is host of the Credits podcast. So last week, I really need to understand what you were thinking when this story broke. Two black men were arrested in a Philadelphia Starbucks. Here's an account of what happened when police arrived, responding to a call from the store's manager.
Well, initially, as soon as they approached us, they just said, "We have to leave." There was no question of, you know, was there a problem here between you guys and the manager? You know, what happened?
The company CEO is going to shut down 8,000 stores for half a day. That's happening on May 29th. Employees will spend that time going through racial bias training. Kalina, let me get you going here.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think when you heard this story?
I mean, like stories of a similar nature that have been really headlining in the news as of late. I was appalled because I meet people in coffee shops, you know, across Atlanta for meetings all the time. And I would hate for someone to think that I was, you know, either affecting business by just being present or, you know, something like that. I think that it was absolutely unfortunate. And I also believe that this happens an awful lot in in the Black community and to the Black community. But I think that Starbucks is doing a good job with trying to make amends as best they can.
Really? Is that
how I think
you,
so.
You think so?
Yeah.
Jake, what are your thoughts? So one of the things that occurred to me is that this is so against brand, right? It's so against the Starbucks brand. It's a private company, to be sure. But I think because of the way the business is run, it feels like a private company defining the public space in a way, right? We do go and we do meet our friends there. And
that's the point of the coffee shop.
That's the point of the coffee shop.
And it's actually been a part of their brand thrust. If you think about it, a couple of years ago, they had a campaign where they actually were pushing community and conversation,
yes.
Right?
I used to work there. So, yeah, it's true.
Yeah, and so this was odd in many ways because this has permeated, this notion has permeated through their culture. And so so I think it was an unfortunate situation, but I too am watching very closely how Starbucks is responding. And I think in this first phase that they have really been good in terms of their intentions.
Wait a minute. Jake, look, shutting down the stores for half a day for training, diversity training, does that feel like a legit move? Does it feel gimmicky to you at all?
Yeah, I think that this is a Starbucks was in a relatively difficult position because as you hit the massive amount of stores that they have, it's very difficult to maintain that brand integrity. And this was a store, I think, that had an individual policy, which was if you're not a purchaser, you can't use the restroom. Bottom line is racial profiling or racial biases are not okay. They need to be immediately addressed. I do think that Starbucks has attempted to fully take accountability. It is interesting that the manager was not let go, but I think in large part that is Starbucks' policy of trying to protect their employees. But there's no doubt about the fact that Starbucks does brand themselves as a community. They want their stores to be a place where you can come get good opportunities and meet people, and I think this is inconsistent with that.
Has anyone ever been through a diversity training or racial bias course? I mean, is it possible in a half-day session to rewire people?
So you can start the process in a half-day session, and I've participated in that kind of training, sexual harassment training. The training thrust needs to be continuous. Right. It shouldn't be a one off and not just the training by itself. I didn't see the training as gimmicky because I'm looking at it in the context of all the things that have happened, including the CEO going to the gentlemen who were arrested to express, you know, his apology to them. And so.
Christian, your thoughts on this?
A couple of things come to mind. I was watching the protests on Periscope. I think it was on the Monday following. And one of the...
did that feel appropriate to demonstrate, to protest, to, in some cases, boycott?
You know, I think so because if you feel that strongly about it, then I think you need to speak your mind. And this is their quote-unquote neighborhood Starbucks. And if people are... Now, I know, I'm sure that not everybody who was protesting was, you know, was in the neighborhood, perhaps. But one of the things that was important to me was I heard a Black gay gentleman who was HIV positive, who works for Starbucks, say that there was little accommodation for his disability and being HIV positive and various things about not being able to open the store at 5:30 in the morning as, you know, waiting there in the cold for his coworkers, and how he felt that Starbucks has been discriminatory against its employees as well. And given the fact of how many people in the Black gay community are HIV positive. And many, many minorities do work for Starbucks, which is a great thing. But I think there were some voices that came to light. So, but I also don't see a lot of Starbucks in high minority communities.
It's On Second Thought. I'm Tony Harris. It's Friday, and we are hanging out in the break room. My guests this morning are Kalina Bowler, host of the Credits podcast. What are you doing, Tamika? Are you doing a Facebook posting? Are you doing an Instagram thing?
Just took a selfie.
Yes, Tamika, took a selfie?
I did.
You're in a break room with all of these fabulous people, and you took a selfie.
It's going to go with the group shot when all of this is over.
So that's Tamika DePriest. She is Senior Director of Communications at Emory University. Jake Evans is President of the Atlanta Young Republicans. And Christian Zilovitz is the Director of Community Outreach of Pride School Atlanta. I've been mispronouncing your name the whole hour. You are so kind, man. It's only radio. Beat me up. It's fine.
Just don't spill chocolate milk and dance on it.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. We are in the break room. So a new revelation came out this week involving President Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen.
The most stunning moment probably came when Michael Cohen was forced to reveal the identity of a mystery client whose name he tried to keep quiet, and that client is Fox News host Sean Hannity.
Well, so Sean's secret is out, but he says he never used Cohen for anything legal. So, let me see. Jake, what do you think here?
Shocking, I would be picked for this one.
oh my gosh.
I mean, I'll tell you, in the higher circles, Sean Hannity is one of the most respected people out there. And I think that's really across the board. Sean,
what do you mean when you say across the board?
Well, in the higher circles. Now, you know, the partisan
of conservative and Republican thinking.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. And he professes that he never formally retained him. He never exchanged any money for any legal services. And it really just revolved around advice for real estate properties in New York City.
Should he have disclosed the relationship?
Should Hannity?
Yeah.
You know, if he wanted to be prospective about it. Now I am also an attorney, and I'll tell you the attorney-client privilege is a very sacred privilege, and I think he probably operated under the assumption that that relationship would never be disclosed. And typically, without the crime-fraud exception, it wouldn't have been disclosed. But this was an instance where it was. And, you know, that was a judgment call that he made, and he decided not to disclose it.
Do you think it was a mistake?
In hindsight, you know, he may or may not regret it. I candidly don't think it was. And I also don't think that this impinges on his credibility whatsoever.
Yeah, there's the question. Christian, what do you think?
The phrase, "I did not have sex with this woman," comes to mind because somebody says this didn't happen, it, or that other things didn't happen, I don't know. It's a challenging situation at best.
Should he have disclosed the relationship on air to his viewers? Michael Cohen is a guest on the program, and oh, by the way?
Oh, I would definitely say yes. Just like public radio says, in all openness, these people are sponsors of these programs, and if you can't say it, then perhaps it shouldn't be happening. Hmm.
Does this not sound like any episode of Better Call Saul to anyone else? I mean, literally, Saul Goodman, Breaking Bad, all of this seems very, very suspect. And I will admit to my own bias in this regard, because I am not a Sean Hannity fan. I do understand that in conservative circles, he's, you know, well-respected. In a lot more left-leaning circles, centrist circles, he is not so much.
But his viewers don't care.
It seems like they don't care. Now, I do know that that practice is normal. Like, if you just need advice, you know, you could say, hey, here's some advice, da-da-da-da.
Jake doesn't care. Doesn't care about disclosing that relationship.
But I feel as though because he was not retained, this is going to be, oh my gosh, my friends are going to kill me for this.
Do it.
If this is in fact true, that he was not retaining him for full on, you know, lawyer status or what have you, you could get advice from lawyers. I've gotten advice from lawyers all the time without retaining them.
But so, are lines being blurred here?
Well, I mean, again, this was
an opinion journalist, correct? He's not operating as an objective journalist. He's like an opinion columnist on the air, correct? Is that fair?
But is it? I feel like it would have been different maybe if Michael Cohen was a lawyer on retainer for the Fox Network versus him personally. I don't know. This seems
it's all
murky. It's Saul Goodman, y'all. I'm telling you.
It's all suspect because on the one hand, Hannity said, you know, I haven't used him or retained him as a lawyer. But then on the other hand, earlier in this story thread, there was something said about, you know, sort of client privilege. Yeah. So which one is it?
Which one is it? Okay, I've got to get Beyonce in the program. Beychella. Beyonce makes history as the first black woman to headline Coachella. And everyone tells me that's a very popular arts festival. Looking strong. What do we think? What do we think of Beyonce, Coachella, first woman of color to headline? Kalina, take it away.
All right, sure. I'm not the hugest Beyonce fan, although this performance.
Okay, moving on.
Hold on. Go ahead. Come back. Don't do this to me.
Come back, because I
will say this. This performance made me. You know, I was up at 3 a.m. on purpose to watch this. People were texting me like, get up, girl, watch this. Because I am a proud alum of Howard University, which is an HBCU. And seeing the way that we celebrate at our homecomings, at our battles of bands, at our football games, you know, crossing lines if you were a fraternity or sorority, it was amazing.
You loved it. That's it. That's all the time I have. Thanks to the break room for today. Our panel, Christian Zilovitz, Jake Evans, Tamika DePriest. Thank you.